we are told, truly told, the memory of the just is blessed. You want to be blessed? Don't forget Tom Lewis. The memory of the just is blessed. You want to be blessed? Remember this just man. He carried high and proud the banner of peace and justice in this community, perhaps like no other, like a one-man revolution. Don't forget him. Remembering him, you'll be blessed in many ways. But one way you'll surely be blessed, remembering him, you will be calling to mind a man in whom the elements were so mixed that nature might stand up and say to all the world, this was a man.
It's May 9th, 2008, and this is 508, a show about Worcester. Today's show started off with some words from Father Bernie Gilgun from the funeral mass, or I should say memorial mass, for our friend Tom Lewis held in Worcester this past Sunday. Today on the show, we have a big panel, Cha-Cha Connor, Brendan Mellican, Bruce Russell. How is everyone?
Fine.
I'm glad to hear from you all. I wanted to get to Cha-Cha first because I know she has some stuff to do this morning. Cha-Cha, Real Solutions, a group that you're involved with and I'm also involved with, is very busy this week.
That's true, Mike. This past Tuesday, we did a press conference, or Monday, actually. This past Monday, we did a press conference regarding the Maine South Woodsman killings. And what we were saying specifically, besides that it's a tragedy, was that we condemn the police for their work in solving this crime, which is as yet unsolved. There's a person of interest, but
wait, you condemn the police, or you commend the police?
No, we condemn the murders, and okay. we commend the police actually for their work. And the other thing that we had to say was that we wish as much progress had been made on the attitudes of hate and ignorance that still persists citywide, directed against people who engage in sex work or who engage in drug use, and that it's a time for ourselves as community leaders and also ourselves as a city as a whole to kind of take a look at how our attitudes contribute to this climate and what we can do to change them. So for us, it was a moment of reflection in the midst of a really terrible tragedy.
Now, also this week, you guys put a couple of petitions to the city council. Is that right?
Yes, we did. We put a couple of petitions into city council regarding lodging houses in Worcester, and I think this has to do with Real Solutions' ongoing concern about kind of the disappearance of single-room occupancy in Worcester.
Well, I should say, and one of these petitions was asking the city manager, can we have some numbers on the decline of so-called SROs in the city, and then also just to look at, is the city dispersing any federal or state funding, towards this kind of housing?
Right. Yeah, and I think since then we've had to reword a couple of those petitions, but that's still basically the gist of them. I think at this point they're going to the city manager, and we have no idea how they're going to move forward. But I think the point is that it behooves us as a city to be concerned about the disappearance of single room occupancies, because for very low income people in the city, they're some of the only even quasi-affordable housing around.
Well, and we should point out that after Tom Lewis died, his housemate Bruce Russell, who's on the show today, was suddenly in need of a place to stay while, getting things reorganized. And going into an SRO was absolutely the way to go. It was something, he could get set up in a couple of days and didn't need a lot of money up front.
So there's some issue also, I think, with certain restrictions on lodging houses in the city and the way that the Zoning Board of Appeals handles lodging houses. And I'm not an expert on this issue by any means, but I think it also behooves us to look at those restrictions. We should look at whether they're legal, and we should also just look at the way that it makes it harder to run a well-run lodging house.
Right, because this is sort of an issue of the housing market, in some sense, right? That you know, it seems like there's less of this kind of housing than there's been before, and maybe it's because there's less demand, and maybe also part of it is because it's more challenging, you know, legally more challenging to run nowadays.
And there's questions about whether it should be, right? I think that it's a fantasy, you know, as you were just pointing out, to think that, you know, everybody's just going to be able to throw down for, you know, a 500, 600, you know, 700, 800 a month apartment. You know, people are in different stages in their lives.
Right.
People go through stuff. And, you know, whatever, a lot of us have been there, you know, and I think that we've just got to be realistic as a city about that.
Bruce and Brendan, do either of you guys have any thoughts on SROs?
What is an SRO?
Well, an SRO, it stands for single room occupancy.
Oh, okay.
So it's like where you're staying now. You know, it's basically a bunch of rooms, and you don't have your own personal bathroom or kitchen in your current place, right?
Right.
So you share with other people, but it's also somewhat cheaper than getting a straight up apartment, or at least, I mean, you didn't have to like put up first and last months on your current place, did you?
No, I didn't.
Did you have to pay anything besides just like the first week of rent?
No.
Well, there you go. Bruce, what's been your experience with this current place you're in now?
Well, it's only temporary for like a few months, so.
Okay. Brendan, do you have any thoughts?
I really don't. I think Cha-Cha did a fantastic job of covering the entire issue.
That's sweet.
Cha-Cha, whenever you have to go, just go ahead and tell us you're hanging up and hang up.
Yeah, I think I am going to go. The only last thing that I'd like to say, actually, is that one thing I wanted to say on this show is that I was shocked by the positive media coverage of the kind of changing the climate of hate against sex workers and folks who use drugs issue. So Channel 3 showed up to the press conference, and they were just amazingly positive. The story led off on the 10 o'clock news. And I also did a on-air interview with Hank Stoltz later that same day. And he was amazingly positive and really nice about it. And we actually read the names of the women who were murdered on the air. And so I was just, it's a real far cry from when I remember talking about these issues several years ago and I was feeling like I was getting eaten alive and no one was listening. So I'm really quite pleased with what I think is an appropriate media shift.
Yeah, well, you know, if I would like to say something to that, and you know, I think you're absolutely right that the city's attitude is changing for the best. I think a lot of it has to do with the language that people are using. Where we used to talk about, you know, hookers and heroin addicts, right? Which when we use that kind of language, and it would, by doing so, it would invoke like worst images we could possibly come up with of Maine South, right? And most of them were false images, but they were still what we were throwing out there to the public. Now we talk about, like you've been today, sex workers and drug users, right? Which invokes like your cousin who's stripping to pay for law school, and you know your nephew smokes a little bit of weed over behind Doherty. And now the images that are created are completely different images, but we're talking about the exact same thing. So the average person is forced to realize they're already a part of an issue that they've been able to ignore in this area for however long, well, since Worcester started, right? Because, I mean, I'm sorry.
Well, I have to say, as a person who works in social services, I think, I wish I felt as positively and confidently as you do. I actually still hear a lot of negative stereotyping, but I think you're right that, these are more respectful ways that we can talk about and think about the issue, right? And
yeah,
by thinking about them in that way, I think it not only breaks down stereotypes of all kinds, right? People a lot of times talk about stereotyping of Maine South and living in District 4. You know, I'm sensitive to stereotyping of a lot of neighborhoods, you know, but I think there's also stereotyping of people that goes on, right? And I think that's really what Real Solutions was talking about, and I think that there's a lot of work that still has to be done on the city level and among, you know, all of us as city residents. But I was just really nicely surprised that on this particular issue, which had to do with the victims of the Maine South Woodsmen, that from Channel 3 and from Mr. Stoltz, that stereotyping didn't happen. And that was a really, that has not always been my experience with the media in Worcester. And so it was a really pleasant surprise.
Agreed.
So I've got to go because I got to do a health fair.
All right. Good luck.
Thank you guys very much. I'll see you later. Bye.
Nice talking to you. Cha-cha. All right. Well, I have a bunch of minor things. I have a lot of positive things to say about the city this week and some local website news issues this week. But, Brendan, I wonder if either you or Bruce have any actual news or policy to talk about.
Bruce? Morning. I defer to you. No, well, you know, there are a bunch of things.
Wait a second. I think we need to get to the bottom of this issue of Bruce sounding so tired this morning. Bruce, how are you doing? Have you had any coffee today?
No, yeah.
All right, that explains it. All right, so Brendan, what were you going to say?
You know, today, I love, we're doing this a little bit earlier now, so I was racing to actually get in and take a look at what was the telegram today. Mm-hmm. It's been a pretty slow news week, but today it seems like we held everything off for the license commission. Must have been the busiest license commission meeting today, you know, in history of the license commission. So we've got the gun range over on Grafton, over on in the Boston gun range there. And they had their city license suspended.
Right.
Yesterday's gun range, which was kind of expected. But what's interesting is that the lawyer for the gun range is saying that they're going to stay open anyways, because their interpretation of state laws, they can operate in the city as a gun range. That their shooting gallery range that the city issues is just like an afterthought, right? It's like a city license. It's actually irrelevant to running a gun range.
That as long as they're in compliance with the state, everything's okay.
Which is interesting because, you know, I mean, a lot of the firearms issues that we have in the city in terms of licensing all come down on the licensing authority, which is the chief of police, right? And that's the way the state is set up now. It seems as though there's some gray areas with an actual gun range, which would be interesting to see how that plays out. So anyone who lives in that area, I'd wait to see if they go and lock the place today and start opening fire. It could make for a good raid at some point in the afternoon. Then we've also got alcohol sales, Greenhill Park. Finally, so, I mean, which I think is a great thing. I mean, I'm actually thrilled that this is happening. I think it's, you know, this is a one-day event that they're allowing the licensing for. But what's great for a golf tournament, I mean, but, you know, it's been a couple of years now that people have been fighting to have some sort of alcohol sales up there and to step in the right direction. I don't know that I agree with how it actually happened, you know, but it's a lot of folks that are awfully friendly, are involved with the one-day licensing, but I guess that's the way anything is going to happen. If progress is going to be made around here, we know it's going to be made through a fair amount of backroom dealing.
And, you know, I was excited to see on the front page today that City Councilor Joff Smith is talking about having a city lottery.
Yeah, I don't... great. So, you know, here's the thing, Mike, and I might be a crazy person for this, right? It was just a couple months ago, maybe a month ago, that we raided a Dominican outfit down by Chandler Street that was part of a statewide, like, gambling ring, or like a bookmaking ring is what it was called. In reality, what it seems that this group was doing was actually just bringing the Dominican lottery here, which is a pretty common thing for almost any, you know, any minority group within any city. It'll take, like, the lottery from your country of origin and sell the tickets and whatnot here.
Okay.
And then, you know, just it adds to the pool of, like, a national lottery. Because, like, I go to Honey Farms and buy a Dominican lottery ticket, but if I get a cousin who's still in the Dominican, he can make sure that everything is lined up, the tickets are purchased and whatnot.
Right.
So that it seems like there are, like, revenue-generating sources that already exist here, right? Like, we don't need to create, like, silly things like lottery tickets for just Worcester. I mean, how grim is that? But a special Worcester lottery ticket? People are going to come flocking in from Auburn to buy our special Worcester lottery ticket that somehow can be better than the state lottery ticket. You know, if we really are interested in revenue generation, sources of generating revenue, they exist already. Things like gambling, you don't have to have a casino to, like, legitimize gambling. You know, like, we've got hundreds of bookmakers already working in the city, right? Legitimize them and tax them. You know, some of these things are just so bizarre. The intent is spot on, but it just seems so silly. I scratch my head and wonder where these guys come up with these ideas. But.
It was just kind of exciting to me because I feel like he's sort of cementing his position as the Gary Rosen of the 21st century. He's always good for an interesting resolution for such a young fella. Here's what I have on local website news this week. First of all, we have this website from a guy who has name I think is Mark Reese, and someone forwarded this to me and said, it's another mad blogger. And I think this guy's mad in two different ways, angry and comes off as a little bit crazy. He has basically started this blog called The Renegade Blogger to complain about an experience he had with Karen Shea Modeling, I believe it's called, in the city of Worcester. And it's great because it seems to have gotten a huge amount of response despite the fact that he's basically only described like half of his experience. He has one post that sort of talks about, oh, you know, I saw this thing and I thought it was kind of misrepresented. I thought I was going to be dealing with some larger organization than Karen Shea Modeling. And I went in there and he sort of leaves off the story at that point and then turns into like, you know, oh, people are writing me letters of support. Karen Shea is writing me letters of complaint. And I'm just excited to hear the second half of the story, which I think is basically that he felt pressured into spending money for modeling services to himself as a prospective model that he didn't want to pay for. And my sense is ultimately did not pay for. So it doesn't seem like he had a hugely negative experience. It seems kind of like maybe he had a wasted hour. But I thought it was interesting that he started a blog as a result of this.
Well, it's interesting. The target is interesting too, right? Because Karen Shea is on the License Commission, and she's an employee of the City of Worcester. So the intrigue is twofold, right? I mean, we've got someone attacking like a relatively powerful position person in the City of Worcester, and it'll be interesting to see.
I just finished reading Clay Shirky's book Here Comes Everybody, which is a fantastic book, and he talks in there about what he calls ridiculously easy group forming. This is a perfect example of it, you know. If someone wasted an hour or two of your time in the past and you felt really annoyed by it, your ability to contact others who felt as you did and then publish something widely enough, to get the attention of your original target of criticism, that would be a huge time investment. So here's a blog where the guy has probably spent slightly more time than the original hour or two of his that may have been wasted on this and has yet had this impact. That we're like sitting here talking about it now. You gotta love the internet.
Otherwise, you'd be sitting at home watching Jerry Springer.
Yes, Bruce.
You gotta. With this thing, we talk about models and stuff. The guy was one of. Does actually anyone really care about this stuff? It seems like just people have other things to do besides worrying about a model or stuff like that. You know how keen. If Worcester came out with their own keen. I just think how keen that would be.
It would be pretty keen. Well, the thing with this model, Bruce, I guess, was that the guy, and this is the way he describes it, he saw an ad on Craigslist, which led him to believe that some fairly prominent modeling organization was going to be holding auditions in Worcester. And he had always had, I guess, maybe he had some thoughts of being a model. He sort of is an older guy, maybe middle-aged guy in his 40s, has his own job and all that stuff. He shows up at the thing, and it turns out it's just, a much smaller agency. It's not really a big deal. And then he feels like he's being pressured into spending money he doesn't want to spend. And he has some links to, I think, Federal Trade Commission stuff about how not to get scammed by modeling agencies. And I guess his feeling was that enough of what was going on like fit the kind of description on this FTC pamphlet that he felt like, well, maybe this is like even considered unethical within the modeling community. But anyway, I think that as far as I can tell, that's basically all that went down here. Nothing
that
super shocking.
Really, yeah, no, there's nothing crazy. But that's a pretty common complaint, though, and it's something that because the kind of business that Karen Shea runs is also something that, in other areas is frowned upon. Like there are certain states where you can't run a business like that, where, we've all been to a shopping mall where someone comes up, you see like a girl walking around, like scouting out other young girls and whatnot, convincing them to be models. Like they don't really end up being like, Ford fashion models from doing that. Right. I mean, like that whole process of becoming a model is like a like an international model. It is a different process than what takes place here in Worcester. But it's it's a very lucrative business for scouting people for like local modeling and regional modeling opportunities and whatnot. And some people would argue that you're preying upon young women's wants to become like famous models and whatnot, even though the opportunities really don't exist in that fashion. So there are some places that have changed the wording of the regulations covering modeling agencies to keep places like this from operating. I think if you really looked at what Karen does, though, she actually does fill a niche in terms of needs for local businesses, regional businesses, in terms of modeling and finding talent for a variety of other sources, not just print modeling, but which is kind of like a full-featured like talent agency, but on like a regional level. So it isn't really quite the scam that you would see of girls just like scouting out other young women at a shopping mall and convincing them to be supermodels for only $200 worth of headshots. That's like a scam. I mean, it's an outright scam. It's a pretty common scam too. Something that you see a lot in the Midwest in small towns, because you tell a young lady she would be perfect to be a model. Chances are good she's going to give you any. I mean, you find the right person, they're going to give you anything they have to become that famous model.
Well, I'm curious to hear the rest of this guy's story. I guess that's all I have to say about this.
We're still curious to hear Anthony Muir's story, and that one hasn't
worked. His site is back with a vengeance. A lot of the old posts are back. A lot of the old historical document stuff is back. Like, the stuff that made this an interesting site to begin with, a lot of that stuff is back. Challenges to local figures to meet in the ring for a gladiator-style fight, those are not back. So it's a mixed blessing, but what are you going to do? Jordan Levy has a blog. I've been looking at this week. There's finally an RSS feed for this, and it's kind of an annoying RSS feed because it's just the headlines, and the headlines aren't very clear. And I don't know. I mean, I'm not a Jordan Levy fan, so I guess it's not surprising I'm not super excited by this blog. But it's kind of cool. I mean, I don't know any other, I don't know any other media figures besides, like, Scott Zoback. Who's a fairly young media figure in the city, who are actually blogging. Right. So, good for him.
I got one thing
to say.
What's that, Bruce?
I was talking to Mauro yesterday. He was like, he's getting sick and fighting with the people about the, because they want to cut the funding.
Right.
And he asked me, we should ask Scott and Claire to send letters to the TNG or whatever.
The Research Bureau put out a call this week for the city to sell off things and cut back funding on things and whatever. And I think that some of these suggestions are maybe new. Some of them are great. Jeff Barnard was talking about the Research Bureau, calling on the city to sell the airport. And he was like, wow, this is fantastic. Maybe the Research Bureau should also, like, in terms of obvious things, that are already happening, call on the city to demolish the downtown mall. That's the kind of cutting-edge suggestions in this report. Jordan Levy, I wish I could do an old guy voice, especially because this is all about being an old guy. It's called Stop Picking on the Old Folk. This is yesterday's blog entry, yesterday afternoon. There they go again, as sure as the swallows coming back to Capistrano, the now so-called Regional Research Bureau. Actually, I think it's just called the Research Bureau. The now so-called Regional Research Bureau has issued its annual hit list. We've all got a list of city services that could be sold or farmed out, but the Bureau is at least persistent in their execution program. I agree with some, disagree with others, but is this the time, with this economy, to be having a garage sale? First and foremost, stop picking on the old folk in this city. I'm one of them, and the authors aren't far behind. The Senior Center is not a club where card games are played. It's an integral part of the fabric of social, medical, legal, and services that make getting old a lot happier and easier. Pick on someone your own age, Research Bureau. Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Anyway, there you go.
If Jordan Levy spoke in that tone, I would listen to him nonstop. I would record the Jordan Levy show, and I would just listen to it in like audiobook, like recording on tape. I'd listen to Levy on tape in my car in the morning. I'd wake up to Jordan Levy. It'd be what I'd play through my alarm clock. You, Mike Benedetti, just fixed everything that's wrong with Jordan Levy.
As Muhammad Ali said of someone else, he's too old and too ugly to be the champion. Look at me, I'm pretty. There you go. He does have a little, what's it called, the Levy Minute or something? He has some sort of like little daily micro podcast on here, but I don't think you can actually subscribe to it, and I have no idea what audio format it's in. I can't get it to play on one of my computers. It might be real audio or something. It's very mysterious. Yes, Bruce?
Hey, look at me. Everybody wants to be the man, but look at me. They look at me, so.
You know what, man? You're old, but you will still be the champion.
That's right.
We've had this discussion before of whenever you go into a nursing home, if you'll pass on your powers of metal to me.
No, I'm never going to go pass on a nursing home, man.
I'm holding on hope that one day you'll change your tune on that one.
No, I don't think so.
All right.
I might be old, but...
You might be old, but what?
I might be good, right, but I might be old, but at least I still have a figure and I still have my build, so...
Oh, there you go.
And people still love me, so, you know?
I have to say, like, I could say that you're old, but the fact that you can, like, bench press 10 times as much as I can means you're not really that old.
That's right.
I want to mention two things about the Telegram and Gazette this week. One of them I should mention is that I got spammed by the Telegram and Gazette this week. Which just, you know, it doesn't annoy me that much because, you know, it was just them adding me to some random public distribution email list. It just so kind of surprised me because I feel like, as we've said in the past, like, they don't have a lot of goodwill to burn nowadays. I don't exactly understand why they're spamming people who...
Yeah, they do the weekly email. I get a weekly email every Friday. And the only time I've ever given them my email address is to register for a comment. Like, uh-huh. Leave a comment on the site.
Oh.
And I get this weekly email from them now. It's just like, it gives me like the most popular stories of the week, and it's the worst email ever because it's essentially like showing me what I read already and how many other people read it.
I've actually signed up for a couple of their things in the past. I think I signed up for their daily business thing for a while. I unsubscribed from that. I signed up for Breaking Stories. I might still be on their Breaking Stories list. And it's theoretically possible that during that sign-up, something in the language says, we can use your email for whatever. But it's not really important what's legally they're allowed to do. In practical terms, all they're doing is pissing me off by adding... This is like a weekly calendar email or something, which is a fine service. It's just not a service that I opted into. And, you know, again, it's not like I'm horrified at being spammed. I'm just kind of surprised that they're, like, going out of their way to alienate people.
Hey, Mike.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Bruce?
Hey, I mean, I have a fantastic idea. I was thinking about this yesterday.
What is it?
We should do some kind of, do a next episode we do of the show. We should do something about homelessness in the city. And the other thing, it'd be great to get a bunch of, I don't know, 11 or 12 year-old kids with their parents to come into a show and talk about their what it's like to be a kid going to school or whatever.
That's a good idea. You know, speaking of 11 and 12-year-old kids and even younger kids, the Dragon Sorcerer that we had an interview about in last week's show, it's going on tonight and tomorrow night, Friday and Saturday, at the Unitarian Church downtown. And you can go by HBML, the HBML Junk Shop, and buy your ticket with a donation. I'll actually be working at HBML today, so if you come down there and mention the show, I will give you a free gift along with your ticket to the Dragon Sorcerer. Because they spam me, I just wanted to pass along some other criticism of them because I'm just kind of in a bad mood about them because of this spam. That Jeff Barnard had an interesting post Wednesday called TNG Ripoff. Did you see this, Brendan?
Yes, I did.
And he basically just points out in more detail than has been pointed out before that having your blog hosted or I guess maybe syndicated to the Telegram and Gazette website seems like kind of a rip.
Totally.
Which is like obvious. I thought this was interesting because I had not realized that some of the people who have a blog there also have a blog living with identical content living somewhere else. In this case, it's Brent Abrahamson's Southbridge and Beyond blog. And based on my quick skimming of this blog and the TNG version of it, and he points out that the TNG will not link back to your actual blog, which is why it's kind of a sleazy situation, but right. That there actually seems to be more comments on his private blog than on the Telegram and Gazette version of his blog, which I think is kind of maybe not that surprising, but a little bit interesting.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense, because if someone is actually out, we talked about this before when it came to some of the problems with the Telegram. Since the Telegram doesn't have any sort of search engine optimization, they essentially don't exist online. So even their blog content, it's not really, unless you're searching for an actual headline, like if you're just searching for some sort of fuzzy logic that might, you know, some word combination that might find its way into a blog post, say, or an article, it's never going to come up, right? You'd have to actually be searching for an actual headline. Whereas someone's personal blog, you know, probably inadvertently is loaded with some degree of search engine optimization. So you just if you're out there searching for Southbridge content, right? That blog is going to come up well before the Telegram and Gazette content comes up.
I wonder to what extent it has something to do with the ecology is probably too strong a word for it. Just the sort of culture of commenters that grow up around the blog. We've commented before that the Telegram and Gazette comment section, there's a lot of anonymous comments. There's a lot of sock puppetry. There's a lot of stupid racists on there. I still have never seen a decent discussion on the Telegram and Gazette website. And I'm looking this week. I'll put these in the show notes. A great discussion about school funding on your blog, Radio Ball, this week, and a good one about bus funding on the Worcester Magazine blog this week. And City Councilor Kate Toomey actually being involved in that second one, which is pretty badass. And I think that's great. And that's, you know, that's the kind of thing that we definitely need more of in the city. And for whatever reason, Telegram is that website, not very hospitable to that.
No, not at all. And who knows? Because you're right, there is a sort of culture that surrounds it, that kind of discussion, and kind of public discussion. And I don't know why it can't find its way into newspapers, but it seems as though that it's a pretty consistent thing where almost every newspaper seems to have a difficult time bringing in any sort of constructive conversation into their commenting system. It's not just the Telegram. It's like any newspaper that has a commenting system. Maybe it's because they're not nurtured, really. But yeah, it's definitely a problem.
Well, Brendan, you wanted to mention something about the Fishburg Senior Center?
Yeah, well, you were talking, you know, when you were reading Jordan's, his blog post, you know, talking about picking on old people and whatnot. Yesterday in the Telegram, there's a really interesting story about Fishburg and their budget woes, which are not too dissimilar from our budget woes. You know, and it looks like the Senior Center up there is taking a budget hit. But what was interesting is that the story is actually framed around the library. So it looks as though the senior center might have up in Pittsburgh might have to close an extra day, from the way this reads, it's going to be reducing its hours and some salaries. But the library in Pittsburgh is taking this ridiculous cut where they're going to be closing it 4 days a week and cutting almost all of its staff. And I just thought it was interesting that, you know, again, like, not, I don't think the library really came into play during this year's budget thing, but it's funny how certain groups do much better during, you know, difficult budget years. Like in this case, a senior center outweighs the needs of a library, which I just find astounding. Like, I don't, maybe it does, maybe I'm totally wrong, but I just can't think of any reason why a library, you know, and especially in this case, they're completely dismantling their children's library.
Oh, no.
Like their children's specific library, which, like, I just can't wrap my head around the idea of, like, why a community would value its, other than voting base, I can't wrap my head around the idea of why a community would hold their senior center to a higher standard than a library. Not that they're not equal. Maybe it could be very equal on any plane of reality, but to say one is more important than the other just seems really bizarre.
You know, it doesn't have to be this way either. We should point this out. You know, the last couple of summers I've lived in South Bend, Indiana, where they're expanding their library system in St. Joseph County. The South Bend Library itself has expanded its hours. It's a beautiful library. They have humongous amounts of new materials coming through there all the time. You know, I'm sure it has to do with ins and outs of how that's getting funded at some level, but it's also, that's just a community that says, hey, this is important.
We got a question for you, Mike.
Yes, Bruce.
You said they have a big material come through every day. Does that mean they have a satanic ritual for the undead?
They have no satanic rituals for the undead, but you know what they do have? They have a really good selection of videos and DVDs and CDs. On the third floor, they actually have like those RFID, warning device to prevent people from stealing those things. And they charge you a small amount, like maybe $1 a day or 50 cents a day to rent those materials. But they have a huge selection. I mean, it's as good, it's certainly better than most Blockbusters that you'll go into nowadays.
Huh.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like, and it's like, you know, it's done up in this sort of goofy video store looking, not even, maybe sort of goofy 80s or 90s video store looking architecture. It's a really pleasant experience to get your AV materials out of that.
You know something that was interesting yesterday?
What's that, Bruce?
Well, I was up to the station yesterday in Tracy, you know, after
WCCA, People's Channel.
And I was talking to Barlow after that, and I went to Tracy. She asked me to write this thing out she was going to put on their website or something about this, for what I thought about the channel, what's so great about the channel.
Do you like the channel? Do you like WCCA?
Yeah. Yeah, I do.
There you go.
I wrote Bruce Snuggle says it's
I think Bruce might be onto something there with the satanic rituals at the public library. That could be a cool revenue generator.
Maybe that's why they're making money. Maybe they sold their soul.
Yeah. All right. Maybe they sold their soul for the undead.
Or they sold their soul for rock and roll.
Well, I sold my soul when I had a whole soul full of shoe, a whole soul from it in my shoe.
Well, all that I have left is positive things to talk about in this city. Brendan, do you have any non-positive things to talk about before we get on to what's exciting?
Why can't I have something positive? Maybe I had a whole line of positive things to talk about.
All right.
I don't have anything positive to offer.
All right. I got three positive things. First of all, this week on the Papa Mocha and Wormtown Taxi blogs, they're talking about Price Right. Which is a grocery that's in the city. It's been in the city for a year, according to one of these guys, discount grocery. And Jeff Barnard does some sleuthing and discovers that actually each individual store is owner operated, which is pretty cool because we always like local economy stuff. And I discovered that these guys are actually apparently connected to ShopRite, which is the grocery store that I used to shop at when I lived in South Jersey. And it reminded me a lot of Big Y, that place, which both of those places remind me a lot of Ralph's, which is where I used to shop in Los Angeles. So it was just nice to be reminded of ShopRite. The other day, here's another exciting thing. The other day I was having a beer with our friend Cindy for her birthday at a local bar. And at some point we were like, oh, can we get any food here? And it was like, not so much. So we went dumpster diving at a dumpster about 20 yards from where we sat drinking our beer and got a lot of chips and came back, and that was a pretty exciting experience. I have never actually like sat in a bar and ate dumpster food before, so that was pretty cool. And this summer, the weather's getting nice. I just wanted to mention something I also mentioned on the Worcesterite blog this week, that there's a trail called the Mid-State Trail that goes through Worcester County, a little over 90 miles from Rhode Island to New Hampshire, and I have a little printable guide in case you want to do the whole thing in one shot. There's also a Mid-State Trail Alliance, I think that they're called, or Association, who have a larger non-free guide. But if you're just curious about it, I would say print out a copy of my little guide for free and think about if it's a fun hike or maybe a couple of good day hikes right here in Worcester County. Very, very accessible.
Sounds good.
Three good things in the city this week. You guys have anything else?
No.
Not this week, Mike. It's a slow news week for me.
All right. Well, hey, guys, thanks for being on the show.
Thanks for having us.
Well,
really.
Well, Bruce, Brendan, it was a lot of fun talking to you, and I will talk to you guys again soon.
Thank you.